Today we have Leela Harris in the studio, a composer, singer-songwriter, pianist, flautist, producer, a first soprano for the Sydney Philharmonic Choir. Oh my God, hello Leela, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Where did you find all that information?
Oh, I was just there.
We've got our ways. Welcome to the show. Firstly, you have a series of musical accomplishments to your name, competition wins, festivals, fellowships, mentoring programs, and you graduated with honours from the CineCon in 2023. Congratulations.
Thank you.
With your album Monstrous Feminine as your graduate work, what is Monstrous Feminine? Can you tell us about that?
Yes, absolutely. Monstrous Feminine as an album explores themes of feminine monstrosity and madness and tropes of feminine power and liberation and catharsis. The album is told through the lens of the Monstrous Feminine, which is a mode of analysis that was created by this academic named Barbara Creed, who created it as a way to analyze horror films. I saw a lot of parallels between the depiction of women within the horror genre and experiences of my own and women throughout history. So each of the songs tells very real stories, but through these tropes from the horror genre and these different archetypes that the Monstrous Feminine identifies.
Speaking of your thesis, you did your written work on scenes of madness in opera.
Yes.
And their implications are for contemporary artists in terms of madness, opera, what have you. What drew you to this niche of operatic madness?
That's such a good question. I have trained as a classical singer since I was very young, and I initially wanted to be an opera singer. And I think really what draws me to singing operatically, I still find the operatic genre to be very interesting, but I feel so powerful when I sing operatically. And what I've kind of been able to unpack is that when women are able to sing very high and loud and present themselves on stage, I think it's one of the few opportunities that women are granted to be loud and take up space. And so that's why I think as both a performer and an audience member, it feels very powerful and cathartic because you're witnessing something that you're not usually able to access in your day-to-day life. So I think that that's something that really drew me to that. And then within the opera genre, I'm really specifically fascinated with mad scenes because for anyone who might not be super familiar, within an operatic mad scene, a woman will lose her mind, usually because of some kind of failed love affair or, you know, something that is, it's usually to do with love. And then it almost always involves murder or suicide. And they're these very virtuosic displays vocally for the soprano. And she's usually drenched in blood and gets to just go absolutely crazy on stage. And I find there's something very compelling about getting to watch a woman do that. But particularly because a lot of this repertoire was written in the 19th century, I was really interested in critiquing what it was about the idea of feminine madness that remains so pervasive for contemporary audiences, and how much of the harmful and misogynistic ideals of womanhood are maybe being carried into the present day from those depictions. And I'm currently doing a master's thesis that focuses specifically on how popular artists are reclaiming feminine madness. So I'm looking at artists who use eccentricity and emotional extremes to explore these things more specifically now, which is exciting.
Who's an artist that you're currently looking at for the masters?
Oh, there are so many. Kate Bush and Tori Amos, for
instance. Oh my God, I love them so much. I love...
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was the first time, but it was the first time it really clicked. I love women that are just so powerfully mad and weird.
And unhinged.
And I think it's so powerful when a woman does it.
Yeah.
And what's super interesting to me is researching recently all of the ways in which women's voices have had these various prejudices against their specific frequencies. So, you know, the idea that women are too shrill or our voices are too high or unpleasant, or even the fact that in the 1920s, radio broadcasts would specifically eliminate the frequencies of the female voice.
Oh my gosh.
Because they thought it would be too unpleasant on listeners' ears. But what that's actually done to recording technology is it's just compressed the frequencies of the female voice so that we still have a phenomenon where Bluetooth speakers or Spotify's algorithms will compress higher frequencies. So, it definitely endures.
Kind of like what you were kind of talking about before, the themes of the Monstrous Feminine, like it has a very like mystical and hazy yet very like desperately raw explanation of femininity and womanhood. Can we dive a little deeper into the themes that you explored in the album, or like how you used instrumentation as well to bring those themes to life?
Yeah, Thank you. That's a super good question. I think specifically working on the album, I was really interested in these extremes of whisperiness and then things that were incredibly loud and dense. I'm very naturally drawn to listening to and creating music that's very dense and dynamic. And so that was something that I really wanted to explore on the album. But I think there's something about, so for instance, Termagant, which is the first full opening track of the album, it uses a lot of whispering and opens in a way that's very sparse. When there's an intimacy between you and the listener that is able to draw them in, then there's kind of a trust established where then you can kind of delve into these more theatrical extremes of the voice and production. But yeah, and then in terms of how that ties into the themes of the album, I really like using storytelling as a way to veil very real experiences and concerns in metaphors and narratives. But each of the songs is certainly very real and explores different ideas of power and agency and my experiences of womanhood, and especially I think uniquely the experience of queer womanhood and how that is something that can feel extremely monstrous at times. And when womanhood is performed to an extreme, it can be something that's viewed as monstrous or condemned, but it's that reclamation of identity and power that I think I wanted to really depict.
I can really tell, even just listening through the album, like how like thoughtful each detail is, and there's purpose behind any of it. None of it is just like thoughtless noise, and how that's quite intimate, and how it can just like be like how you're talking directly to the listener.
Yeah, definitely.
That actually does tie really well into my next question in terms of creating that sacred space with your audiences. You have a showcase coming up in early December, a show you're putting together.
Yes.
It's described as a haunting evening of contemporary art pop. And this is the third time that you're doing one of these?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's Vesperia number 3.
Exactly.
Vesperia the third. How did that come to be?
I wanted to create a space where artists could present new works without fear of judgment and that it was going to go perfectly, but also where artists could present things that didn't need to be categorized based on genre, because so often I felt I was being placed on lineups where I was kind of misplaced. So I wanted a space where I knew that artists who wanted to try something out of the ordinary were safe to do so. And I approached two of my super wonderful friends, Tahi White and Sickle Honey, for the first Vesperia. And it was just such a beautiful experience, and I feel so much pride when I'm able to facilitate a space for artists to do what they're so good at and also what I know they love to do and what they should be sharing with other people. But I also obviously love the opportunity to get to facilitate that space for myself as well and get to be on a lineup with people I really admire. And then in the second iteration, we also had Machine and Krieger on the lineup. And in this third one, we're joined by Angel Tan, who also performs as Fine China. And their music is, you know, a really interesting blend of genres. And also, they're also a drag king. So I'm very excited for them to join us for this lineup. And Tahi makes really interesting art pop. It's like electronic, and he's got this really beautiful rich voice.
I've been wondering as well, Vesperia, the name itself, what does it mean? Where did that come from as well?
Because I was wondering that too.
That's such a good question.
It fits the aesthetic so perfectly.
Thank you. Yeah, so that actually just came from sitting in the botanic gardens with Tahi and Imogen, Sickle Honey, and we were just brainstorming. We were like, what can we call this show? And we were interested in the idea of Vespers, and then we were kind of thinking Vespertine and like the ideas of sacred songs, but then we didn't want people to be confused that we were doing like a Björk tribute. So Vesperia, which is, I suppose, Little Vespers.
What's next for you in music? What's coming up?
Along with my master's thesis, I'm working on a new album, which explores, it's also exploring feminine madness, but more through the lens of extremes of emotion and experience and things that were maybe like considered as madness in a 19th century sense, but are like day-to-day things for me. I'm also working to release an EP next year.
That was Leela Harris discussing their graduate album, Monstrous Feminine, their thesis on operatic madness. And one of your inspiration points you've said is Cats.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You can catch Leela live in concert on December 7th at the Butcher's Brew Bar for Vesperia 3 in Dulwich Hill. Listen to the album Monstrous Feminine on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, SoundCloud, wherever else you get your music. Caught in the Evening Wind as it whistles through the branches of a tree.